Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim, let's dive right in with the good news, which is not getting nearly the attention that the other two are, but that's probably because we don't have an actual decision yet. But this is CNN. Conservative justices and swing vote Justice Anthony Kennedy appeared to side with the Trump administration Wednesday as the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on President Donald Trump's travel ban. More than a year after Trump caused chaos in the airports by following through on a campaign promise and restricting travel from several Muslim-majority countries, the justices considered the legality of a third version of the original travel ban to decide whether the president ultimately exceeded his authority. Coming out of oral arguments, the justices wrestled with the travel ban, at times breaking down on ideological lines. Kennedy's vote could be key, and while he did express some reservation about a candidate's expression of animus against Muslims during the campaign, he didn't seem to have overall concerns about the president's authority to ban entry, noting that the travel ban could be reviewed every 180 days. Other justices, including Chief Justice John Roberts and Samuel Alito, also highlighted the president's power in this area. I would also point out that Alito pointed out that while the liberals call this a Muslim ban, and it does affect Muslim-majority countries, as the story stated, it only affects 8% of the world's Muslims. So if it was really a blanket ban on Muslims, it would obviously be focused on a lot more areas than it is. So the bottom line here, Jim, is regardless of what you think of the policy, whether you think it's smart or whether you think it is incendiary in some way, the president has this power, and it looks like a majority of the court is recognizing that.
Exactly, Greg. There are three different issues that come up with this policy, and they really get blurred together. And it's been absolutely maddening to see judges essentially argue that, that President Obama had the authority to, between this and DACA program, the near unlimited ability to set up various changes or make various changes to the immigration policy, but that somehow President Trump doesn't have that authority to undo or reverse those decisions. It's like the ratchet of a tool, a ratchet wrench tool that only works in one direction. Oh, you're allowed to use executive authority to move it that way. You're not allowed to move it back the other way, though. It's a magic presidential power that only works in one direction or something like that. Now, there are three issues. The first is, you know, is this a good policy? Well, that is really an issue that should be sorted out between the legislature and the executive branch. And that's going to happen in the midterms and in the 2020 presidential election, and that is the proper venue for this debate. You can probably argue, I suppose you could make an argument that if you could prove beyond any reasonable doubt that the president was driving to do this out of a racial animus and not out of thinking it was genuinely the best policy for the country or genuine security concerns or something like that, that you might be able to have an argument there on the, you know, under equal protection or something like that. But that strikes me as much sketchier. And what is before the court is actually a much simpler question. Does the president have the authority to do this? And I to me, it's indisputable. Yes. You know, this is the president has exceptionally broad powers when it comes to immigration authority and things like that. So, and again, like I mentioned earlier, you can't have it under one president, but not under another president. When courts start making decisions like that, it really begins to sound like, well, we're going to give more power to the presidents that we like and fewer powers to the presidents we don't like. And that's not the way the Constitution works. So good sign. I also kind of put a little asterisk to this good martini. Greg, you and I have seen oral arguments that seem to go very well for the argument we prefer. And then the decision doesn't quite turn out that way. So don't count your chickens before they hatch, and don't count on John Roberts until the decision is actually in.
Yes, exactly right. We've seen that many times before, especially with Obamacare. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now, Jim. And for the past couple of days, the president's choice of the presidential doctor, Admiral Ronnie Jackson, has been twisting in the wind a little bit from Trump himself at that press conference with Macron. But basically, the knives have been out for Ronnie Jackson already. A number of allegations, which we'll have you listen to in just a second. And now Jackson this morning has withdrawn his nomination. He stepped back. As far as I know, he's going to stay on as the president's physician, but I don't know that for certain. John Tester is the top Democrat on the Senate Veterans Committee, and he obviously would have a major role in the confirmation process. A lot of these allegations have come through his office. He was on Anderson Cooper's program on CNN last night. Several different clips here. We'll try to get through these quickly. There are three major allegations, starting with the fact that Jackson allegedly handed out pills pretty easily.
The word is that on overseas trips in particular, that Admiral would go down the aisleway of the airplane and say, all right, who wants to go to sleep, and hand out the prescription drugs.
They were like candy. Like an Ambien type.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And put them to sleep and then give them the drugs to wake them back up again.
The second allegation is that Dr. Jackson was repeatedly drunk on duty while overseas with the president. Under which administration did this happen?
It was the previous administration. It was the Obama administration.
Really? The Obama administration? Okay.
There were comments about him being in the hotel room and couldn't respond because he had been drinking so much.
He couldn't actually respond to requests that were being made of him.
That's right.
Someone else had to fill in.
Yep, that's correct.
The third allegation, creating a toxic work environment, also allegations of harassment. What exactly is being alleged there?
Well, I mean, and this was people that were below him, not people above him. We were told time and time again the people above him he treated like gold. The people below him he belittled, screamed at him. Really create a very toxic environment to the point where the people that worked around him felt like they had to walk on eggshells because of his lack of respect for their job.
So after Jackson withdrew the nomination today, President Trump calling into Fox and Friends and railing against John Tester.
For John Tester to start bringing up stuff like Candyman and the kind of things he was saying, and then say, well, you know, these are just statements that are made.
Right.
There's no proof of this. And he has a perfect record. He's got this beautiful record, unblemished. For him to be doing this to this man and this family, I think John Tester has to have a big price to pay in Montana, because I don't think people in Montana, the Admiral is the kind of person that they respect and admire, and they don't like seeing what's happened to him.
Jim, as you pointed out in the Morning Jolt yesterday, where were these allegations when President Obama was president? Obama gave him a sterling review. And earlier this morning on D.C. radio, WMAL, Dan Bongino, a former Secret Service agent, was talking about how Jackson treated everyone exceedingly well, and that one of the reasons that people were given pills on overseas flights is because Secret Service agents couldn't go to sleep at the time they normally would because they had to stay up and protect the president's life. So a lot of different allegations, a lot of different defenses going back and forth. How the heck did we get here?
Yeah, this is sticking in my craw like few other brouhahas and scandals that have come along in the Trump administration era, in part because, look, I don't know Ronnie Jackson. I don't know how accurate these allegations are or how much substance. I did talk to somebody who worked in a previous administration who worked in the White House, thinks he talked to Ronnie Jackson, you know, once or twice. Wouldn't say he knew him well, but worked with the White House medical team fairly regularly. And felt like he'd know familiar. The allegations of this, you know, terrible abusive work environment and being dysfunctional and pills getting lost. And you know, it just doesn't ring true to him that there was this many problems. And I just have a very tough time believing that it could be as bad as all of these people are describing, that no one would ever tell the president about this, either President Obama or President Bush. And oh, by the way, Ronnie Jackson worked on the tail end of the George W. Bush administration, right? So this guy's been in both the White House medical office and in the president's personal physician. He's been in the White House medical office for the past three presidencies. He's been in the president's physician for the past two. And no one, he's, you know, Ronnie Jackson comes across as this, you know, Breaking Bad, Walter White meets the Dukes of Hazzard, crashing his car, drinking, you know, blah, you know. And nobody tells the president, oh, by the way, the doctor who's treating you and your family has some problems here. Really? I you know, and Obama either has never told this, or Obama is told this, dismisses it, and writes him a glowing review in like 2016, right? This is not, you know, ages and ages ago. I will just tell you, John, I don't believe you. I do not believe the allegations that are being reported. Yes, they have two pages of the, you know, they're saying, oh, there's two sources for each one of them. Greg, I can't help but notice there's no names, or obviously there's no names. Everybody says they're afraid of being of retribution. Okay, fine. No dates, no places. And some of these lists are, you know, he prescribed medications when other doctors would not. Greg, we've never seen doctors disagree on treatment before, have we?
Right.
I mean, don't these guys watch Grey's Anatomy?
Or
ER?
Or House,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, by itself, could that be troubling? I suppose, right? This is traditionally why you'd have a confirmation hearing, why you'd want to get to the bottom of allegations like this. But in and of itself, that's not necessarily, maybe the other doctor was wrong. We just don't know about this. But I just, the portrait that is painted, particularly, I think the one that stands out the most is the being blackout drunk, traveling with the president overseas. Because you never know when the president might get shot, might get poisoned, might have some sort of medical emergency. I just have a very hard time believing that happened and there was absolutely no disciplinary action, absolutely no effort to replace him as White House physician. I don't believe that. I mean, I know we've had, scandals in the Secret Service. I know we've had administration scandals, both this White House and the previous administration. I don't believe that things like that could go on for as long as they're describing and as bad as they're describing. And none of this becomes an issue until 24 hours before his confirmation hearing. You could very strongly make the argument that Ronny Jackson was not the best pick, that he had never been an administrative manager before, that he probably, was not set and ready to run an organization as large and complicated as the Department of Veterans. Fine, that's all completely different kinds of arguments here. But this idea that we've had this unhinged, madman popping out prescription medication like a Pez dispenser doesn't fit with this. And the idea that everybody in the Obama administration and the Trump administration would look the other way on stuff like this, I'm just not buying it, making me believe that, John Tester is at the very least credulously passing along allegations we have reasons to be skeptical of. Because look, let's face it, in a lot of, workplaces, the guy in charge will aggravate his underlings. People will feel underappreciated. People will say, why did that guy get promoted and I didn't? Now, again, maybe Ronnie Johnson really is a bad boss. Maybe he really does have a bad temper. Maybe, we're not never going to be able to get back to the bottom of this, but I just have a very tough time believing he would be entrusted with literally the life of the president while demonstrating all of these reckless and crazy and dangerous behaviors.
Yeah, for 10 years. Apparently this is the price, or maybe this is the price for declaring the president sane. Remember how much the White House press corps was upset that President Trump wasn't dying, diagnosed with dementia or considered crazy?
Oh, by the way, if you worked in the Obama White House, I've heard Axelrod once or twice has tweeted out that he thinks highly of Ronny Jackson, but he thinks he's not prepared to be VA secretary. All right, fine. If these if you know these allegations are true and you worked in either White House, you should come out and say yes, and this is a reason, I mean, based on this, you'd say not only should Ronny Jackson not be VA secretary, you would say he should not be White House physician anymore, right? I mean, if he's this much of a reckless in handing out prescription medication and things like that, there should be consequences for this. If this doesn't add up, if this sounds false to you, if you think highly of Ronny Jackson and you think people are lying about him to ruin his reputation before a confirmation hearing, and you worked in the Obama White House, I think you have an obligation to come forward. And the fact that no one is coming forward one way or the other, I think is one of the reasons people hate Washington.
Exactly. So, all right, let's move on to our crazy martini now, Jim. And just what you and I wanted to be talking about again, Kanye West. We talked about it yesterday and why conservatives jumping onto the Kanye bandwagon because he expressed support for Candace Owens and Free Thought and some of other cryptic tweets. Was kind of depressing. Well, now it's not even cryptic. Now he's full on board with President Trump. He says, you don't have to agree with Trump, but the mob can't make me not love him. We are both dragon energy. He's my brother. I love everyone. I don't agree with everything anyone does. That's what makes us individuals, and we have the right to independent thought. Then he posted a picture of the Make America Great Again hat. He was so excited that it got signed and all sorts of other things that got everybody fired up. Kim Kardashian comes to his defense, saying that he's a free thinker. Is that not allowed in America? Because some of his ideas differ from yours. You have to throw in the mental health card because people are saying he's unhinged. That's just not fair. And so on and on. Then we got another rapper saying black people don't have to be Democrats. And Twitter exploded. It went crazy. The liberals are lighting their hair on fire. The Republicans think that these are card-carrying members of the conservative movement now. Now where do we stand?
Where to start, Greg? I'd say that for a while there, we haven't done it a little bit, but I used to do a pop culture podcast with Mickey White. Mickey was a much bigger fan. Actually, still is a very much a fan of both Kanye and Kim Kardashian. I've done absolutely nothing to dislodge her from that position over the years. So this to her was like the singularity. This was the world of reality television celebrities and the political world, merging into one. Greg, we have crossed the streams. Bad things are going to happen. One of the things that jumps out about this, when you tell me, great news, Republicans have gotten Kanye West. Greg, I don't know about you. I start saying, okay, but could we trade him for some draft picks or something? tell me the good news then. Kanye West has no shortage of controversial, wacky statements in his past. Yesterday we talked about, I'm going to let you finish, and George Bush hates black people. So all of a sudden he puts on a MAGA hat, and all of a sudden we're like, yeah, he's one of us now, you know. But what was kind of fascinating is, just as I'm telling people not to get that excited about it, oh my God, Greg, you would have thought that the reaction from a bunch of liberal Kanye fans yesterday on Twitter was apocalyptic. It was just thermonuclear. This was the end of the world. Then, you know, Kim comes in and says, look, I don't agree with him, but stop calling my husband crazy. And I think she has a very strong argument, Greg, in the sense of, don't call him crazy for this. Emphasizing that. Call him crazy for all the other crazy things he's done over the years, but this is no crazier. By the way, one of the reasons I'm telling people on the right to not get that excited about it, Greg, you realize, I mean, Kanye could decide he loves Bernie Sanders tomorrow, right? Sure. I mean, there's just no guarantee that he's going to stay. You know, when Kanye says he and Trump both have dragon energy, I think that means erraticness, sheer unpredictability. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the tiger blood of Charlie Sheen. You know, but so you have this bizarre turn, and then Chance the Rapper comes out and says the most mundane comment, like, you know, black people don't have to be Democrats. For a lot of circles, that's not a controversial statement. In some circles, that is saying 2 + 2 = 5.
Right.
Or the sky is green or something like that. That is, you know, and people just, you know, just when you thought the reaction on social media, which, let's face it, basically exists to overreact to statements like this.
Right.
People were setting their hair on fire. This was the most shocking statement he had ever made. And, you know, instantly people who love Chance the Rapper suddenly decide they can't stand him. Democratic officials are coming out and feeling the need to weigh in and all that stuff. Greg, look, I don't expect any sweeping political changes to come out of these comments from these performers. For a long time, you and I have said that the viewpoints and statements of celebrities are vastly overvalued and overhyped and overanalyzed in our society. But I'll just say that for a couple hours there, it was kind of enjoyable to watch the panic and shock and confusion and outrage upon the part of Democrats as they suddenly realized, oh, wait a second, some African-Americans don't like us. Some African-Americans don't automatically think we're the better choice, and we may not be able to take these folks for granted anymore. Absolutely delightful to watch this. Again, I don't think it's going to last. I mean, I suppose there's an outside chance that this leads to some sort of political, maybe we'll lead it to a discussion in African-American circles about whether they've gotten a good deal from the Democratic Party, or whether Democrats take them for granted, or whether things under Trump are better than they expected, or things like that. Again, I don't think we should overstate the value of these figures as shapers of political thought in African-American circles. But with all of that having been said, watching the other side flip their lids and lose their you-know-what over it, it made otherwise a very long week very enjoyable, Greg.
It was. Yeah, and he had another tweet that Obama was in office for 8 years and nothing changed in Chicago. So, you know, he's praising Trump and then he's going after Obama. The libs don't know what to do. He is crazy on some level, but the Kardashian extended family are marketing geniuses for whatever else they are. And so I'm sure this is going to build publicity and make them exceedingly richer than they already are. So I think that's the ultimate goal here.
There's a slim possibility that might be affecting all this, Greg. Caitlin got to him? Caitlin Jenner, one of our Republican women leaders?
That would be his
parent-in-law.
Parent-in-law, yes. There
so,
we go.
Yes. Look, maybe that is, because that's the thing. If Jenner and Kanye really are, you know, turning her the right, Kim can't be that far behind. And when you and I are at, let's say, the Republican convention in Miami or something in 2020, Greg, and we're watching the keynote address in rap form from Kanye West and, the opening address from Ms. Kim Kardashian, We will basically say, all right, sweet meteor of death, we're ready now. We've peaked.
Jim, 3 years ago, I would have said that's impossible. It's still probably unlikely, but nothing is impossible in politics anymore.
Yes, we Kanye, Greg. Yes, we Kanye.
Phenomenal. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.